Guys, this is Succession. This is HBO. If you don't want to hear me talking about Logan Roy, talking about then don't listen to this. There are bad language words in this show. Hello, and welcome to the Bleed the Swede episode of Slate Money Succession, your guide to episode 5 of Succession, which came out last night. I am Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with Emily Peck of Axios.
Hi.
With Elizabeth Spires of the New York Times, among other places.
Hello.
And with the one and only Peter Kafka. Peter, I can't believe you haven't been on this show before, but this is amazing.
Hello. And no, I didn't take that personally. It took the fourth season for me to show up.
You've been on Slate Money, right? You just haven't been on Slate Money Succession.
You lured me on to talk about Michael Clayton under the premise that it would be a fun movie to talk about, and instead I had to spend time defending.
No bitterness here at all.
We will talk. We will talk about the relative merits, maybe, perhaps. But Peter, before we get into the meat of this, introduce yourself. Who are you?
Hi, I'm Peter Kafka. I work at Vox.com, and I make content there on the website, and I also make podcasts. I host the Recode Media podcast, which is free and available right now. And we just started a 3-part series on AI, which you can listen to right now when you're done listening to this podcast.
Yes. Listen to this one first, because we have a bunch of stuff to catch up on in Slate Money Succession.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, so Peter, catch us up. What's the big news? What's the headline from episode 5?
The episode 5 starts off with a song called "The Takeover" by Jay-Z, which I did have to soundhound to make sure that I was getting the right.
And this is a throwback to, I guess, season 1 when it's the Beastie Boys.
Was it the Beastie? Anyway, when Kendall is riding high, he puts on but wants to
Hype himself up.
Wants to hype himself up and also project to himself and the people in the vicinity of his car. He jams up some hip hop, and so this was right on the nose. Kendall's in charge, or is projecting as if he's taking charge. He's the man, and then he and everyone else who works for formerly Logan Roy has to go to not Sweden but Norway to try to convince Madsen to buy their company.
We do have this clear feeling at the beginning of this episode that even though technically they're co-CEOs, Kendall is first among equals between the two.
Kendall believes that to be
in
the
his
case.
Head. Yeah. He definitely thinks that, and I guess Roman didn't get the same applause as Kendall did. But
we didn't see Roman get any applause. Yeah, right.
They are both super duper play acting. They are both really trying to convince everyone around them and themselves that they are the bosses now.
But when it comes to the fateful decision that Kendall makes, that he wants to try to blow up the deal, it's him making that decision and him persuading Roman, and Roman saying, well, okay then.
But, I mean, you're skipping from the beginning to the end of the episode, and I forgive you. Did Roman really want to blow up the deal, A? B, They didn't blow up the deal. They basically sealed the deal. Because earlier in the episode, Kendall says to Roman, we need to really convince the Swede that we can walk away. Like, we don't care. And that's what they did. They convinced the Swede that they could walk away. And at that point, he raises the offer. And now they're being congratulated on the deal that I think they didn't want, but I sort of think Roman did want.
I mean, for most of the show, whenever Kendall announces a decision, his eyes dart around. And if he gets any pushback, whether it's from Mattson, whether it's from his sister or his brother, he just folds immediately. He says, I'm going to alpha dog this. I'm going to say what we should do. And someone says, well, I don't think that's a great. Oh, okay. And he backs. So they're just sort of twisting in the wind.
Yeah, it also seemed like Roman had some reservations about giving ATN to Mattson, possibly because originally Logan had kind of set him up to potentially be the CEO of ATN. So he's probably still fantasizing about that.
Right. The kids want to run something. And when Mattson comes to them and says, I want to buy the whole kit and caboodle, what they realize is that although money is nice, what they really want is power. And without ATN, they have no power and they just become another pair of rich kids. And as Kendall says to Mattson, like, I'm already rich. Like, having all of this extra money doesn't actually help me very much. It's not like I'm going to be able to, like, buy an extra car. I can buy an extra car already.
Right.
But yeah, without ATN, though, if they want to be important instead of rich, they will have to buy Pierce. They'll have to build something, which they were pretending they were going to do a couple episodes ago. As soon as the opportunity came to not build something and to buy something instead, they were much more comfortable. And they're scared that if they have to try to build a thing on their own, they will fail and they'll be shown for what they really are, which is rich kids.
So one of the things that has bubbled up a couple of times in this show is this idea of, like, the owner of a news network being suitable for that news network. When Logan turned to Roman and said, like, you don't want to own Pierce. Pierce is not your kind of news network. He was right. And then when Kendall went to Mattson and said, you don't understand ATN. ATN is not your kind of news network. He was right. There is this interesting idea that there has to be some kind of philosophical alignment between the owner and the property. And, you know, Shiv understands this. When she like was given the news that Mattson wanted to buy ATN, she's like, great, let's get rid of this toxic asset. Like, because she is not aligned with ATN.
Yeah, Shiv is the interesting character in this episode. Right. I mean, she clearly doesn't want to keep ATN. She's coming to the brothers initially to tell them that Mencken, the presidential candidate, who's like a little Nazi-ish, is listening in or participating in news calls, which is like wild. I don't know if there's some real world comparator to that.
Peter, is there a real world comparator to that?
I mean, that's just a direct call out to Fox and the Trump White House, right?
Yeah.
The Trump wasn't sitting in on the morning calls, but it was, you know, well documented over and over.
He's calling Hannity every morning.
Just right, yeah. So, and she's clearly upset by that, and like Kendall and Roman aren't. They don't even care at all. And I feel like that was a significant moment for her, because in the whole episode, she's definitely playing against Kendall, and she's aligning, you know, with Mattson, basically, and they have that great scene together, which I think was my favorite part of the episode.
It was a great, the Kendall, the Shiv-Mattson scene is so good. It's such a great scene. We should, Emily, you should talk about that scene. My favorite bit, I think, is when she accepts the cocaine from Mattson and just, like, makes it seem like she's going to do some, but then quietly just screws the lid back on.
She's pregnant. Yes. I mean,
so she
had
did.
Done
she did not do the cocaine. Yeah. Yeah.
But she is drinking. She's got a drink in her hand. No, I rewound that several times. Like, did she do the coke? Are they leaving it ambiguous? They, you know, I guess in theory she could have done it off camera, but it seems pretty clear that she did not. She did.
Yeah, I was like looking in the window, like, can I see her reflection doing it? What is it?
P, Peter, is there any tech CEO that Mattson reminds you of?
No. I mean, he's an amalgam of a bunch of things, right? You know, Daniel Ek does not present himself that way. So in terms of the one Swedish tech billionaire that I know, no. There are rumors about various people in tech re-embracing cocaine again. I'm assuming that was cocaine. My consumption of HBO shows has also told me that ketamine is popular with young people again. So I'm assuming that was coke and not ketamine, but I don't know.
Shiv does mention to Tom that a whole bunch of people at this retreat have been doing Molly.
Oh, that scene. Okay, so
we are jumping around here. Yeah, apologies. Yes.
So Shiv and Mattson, they have this like evening conversation, and it's like I feel like it was a good conversation. She's actually honest with him about her marital situation. And it's interesting she made that decision to just be honest, because that's not something that happens a lot of the times in succession. And he tells her this just insane story about how he's sending half liters of frozen blood to his ex. And then the reveal is that the ex is the head of comms, right? Ebba? It's Ebba. It's Ebba.
Ebba is amazing. Yeah, she's my new favorite character.
First of all, it was good also because not only is Shiv, you know, being honest with him, but he's sort of, I guess, being honest with her and actually revealing a weakness.
Well, what's great is that she starts immediately giving him PR advice. And she says her first thing is, you know, 3 points. And she said, point one might be hard for you, but you need to stop sending people your blood.
Just really, really good advice.
Good advice. Good life advice for everyone listening to Slate Money Succession. In general, don't send people your blood. Contraindicated, just as a PR move. But yeah, the degree of like honesty and self-awareness that she shows when she says, we're fucked, it's a disaster, I broke his heart and he broke mine and we lost our footing, is something like, there's no non-Mattson character on the show that she would have been able to say that to.
Right? It's interesting why she made that choice. Maybe she felt like I don't understand why she made that choice, actually, if anyone enlightened me.
It's free therapy, right?
Is Mattson who you would go to for therapy?
I mean, he's an unreliable narrator, so if he turned and used that against you could say, I never said that. And by the way, you were high as a kite the entire time we talked.
But it's also not even, it's not even something that can be used against her, right? It's not like damaging information so much as it's just her like trying to get something off her chest, you know?
They're also flirting, right? She's saying, I am no longer with my husband, I'm available.
That's true.
Right, which is part of his question, too, what he asked.
Right. Like,
what is, are you available?
So are they going to get together? Because she kind of, when she talks to Tom later, before he hits her?
Does something to her earlobe?
Suggests that. Yeah. Does he pull the earlobe or just hit the earlobe?
I didn't really get her hostility toward Tom in that scene. It didn't seem like something new had precipitated that.
I'm really confused by everything about Shiv in this episode, right? Because she's very hostile to him kicking the dirt on his white sneakers. And then towards the end of the episode, I think she saved his job at ATN somehow.
So this it took me a couple of viewings to work this one out. So just in case you missed it, we start off the episode with Roman telling Shiv, look, if you want us to fire Tom, we can totally fire Tom. We're the CEOs. And she demurs, I think is the correct word. She like mutters something about having to go see Jerry and doesn't make a decision one way or the other, but clearly doesn't say yes. And then she does this little like baby psychological torture thing with Tom on the plane on the way back, where she's like, we're looking at some moves at ATN, which is code for we want to fire the leadership of ATN. And Tom is like, you really want to do this? Meaning, like, are you actually going to fire me right now on the plane? And she, like, pulls the little switcheroo and says, yeah, we're going to fire Sid. Do you want to tell him? And he's like, what? Oh, and then he's genuinely shocked that it's not him who's getting fired. And then Shiv puts the Shiv in, right? Because she's done something nice for him. And then she's like, hide your erection, Tom. and then says, "You want to get dinner when we get back?" And then walks off. And it's just like, what?
Yeah, what does it mean, Peter?
I just think these are people who had a long relationship, and it was a complicated one, and now they're in the breakup period, and so there's that thing where they have a ton of resentment about each other. They also are forced to work with each other, and they have mixed feelings, right? So on the one hand, Shiv doesn't fire Tom when she could make that happen and it could be clean. She wants him around. But she also goes out of her way to emasculate him, like really, really heavily with the presence of Mattson. So it's erratic, but I think that is meant to be the case. I think she's supposed to be all over the place.
Yeah, I think it is a pretty realistic portrait of a, you know, dysfunctional couple in the process of breaking up.
Okay, I like it. And in saying we want you to fire Sid, is she also, who's the we? Is it her and Mattson?
No, I think her and her brothers, right?
Remember, that was Logan's plan.
That right. was Logan's plan. Whether Shiv knows that it was Logan's plan. I mean, I think it's reasonable to assume that Roman might have shared that with her. There's no reason why it was secret.
Okay.
And now that, you know, she's learned that Minkin is listening into the news calls, that's like prima facie, you know, grounds for, you know, firing.
Yeah, I'm much more confused by Shiv's periodic naivete. She's supposed to be the super sophisticated comms person who knows the byways of how to communicate, and she's constantly shocked at weird behavior at ATN or at Waystar. Like at the very beginning, when she's the Mencken stuff, that's like, how could she not know that? That seems like the kind of thing that Jane Mayer would have been writing about for 6 months. and she's constantly surprised to find that things in her father's company are not above board.
But, you know, I think, but the reason Jane Mayer publishes that in The New Yorker is because Shiv has leaked it to her, right? And, like, Shiv has leaked it to her because she was shocked when she was found out. She doesn't like these people, and she finds their behavior shocking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just find she's constantly aghast to find that there's gambling going on at the Roy family property.
I sort of read it more as moral outrage about the politics of ATN. She says something, she says a great line where she says, you know, why don't we just get rid of ATN? You know, keep one of Dad's sweaters, it's way less racist, you know?
Yeah, that's why I thought that sort of pushed her to Mattson's side, and basically she helped make that offer happen. You know, she helped make that offer happen, the one at the end. She pumped up Carolina to him, she pumped up Jerry to him. She absolutely wants to have ATN, the toxic asset, sold, and probably likes the idea of it getting IKEA'd to fuck, which I don't really know what that means exactly. But
it's like a gray Bloomberg, Emily.
I mean, I don't know if that's a moneymaker.
Should
right?
we discuss whether Mattson is a... This seems like a terrible, terrible proposition for him. It seems like he will put ATN to zero.
Yeah.
And he's paying an extra $50 a share for this property. It's a serious premium that he's paying. I mean, this is again a little difference between the obvious corollary, which was the way that Disney took the sort of non-news parts of Fox and left the news parts for Rupert to run on his own. You know, Fox was not worth half as much as, you know, 20th Century Fox and all the stuff that Disney bought. So this is. In the world of the of Succession, ATN is a very valuable property. But also, like, very clearly looking at, like, Frank and Carl and how they react to this news, and Jerry, actually, in particular, when they hear the amount of the premium that he's willing to pay to get ATN, they're like, that is way more than ATN is worth, right? Like, if you spun off ATN into something like Fox Corp, it would never be worth that much money. So obviously we have a fiduciary responsibility to take this deal.
Yeah. And ATN, again, you can't, I mean, if it's Fox News, which it is, you cannot value it without Logan Roy running it. Its value goes to not zero because it's got cable distribution rights, et cetera. It's still an ongoing, but without him running it, without him touching it, it's not going to be successful in the way that it is then. And there's no reason to think that Mattson is going to be a good steward for it. So he's dramatically overpaying.
So wait, like, let's be
like
real world
plan,
about
Peter?
This.
You don't like his plan for ATN?
Oh, the Grey Bloomberg, the IKEA. No, but I'm not sure I agree with that. Like, I think Fox News has value without Rupert being in charge. It probably has value even without Lachlan being in charge, no?
Well, when Kendall tells Mattson that he doesn't understand ATN, and Mattson replies, yeah, I do. It's a lot of yelling, small men, big veins.
It's a good line, but it does mean he doesn't understand it.
Yes.
Who is, I mean, look, as soon as he starts to tinker with it and make it less horrible and less yelly or less whatever, the audience that wants all of that will eventually turn the channel or turn it off.
Totally, 100%.
Or die.
Yeah.
And so he's right to say that is a shrinking asset, right? Because the people who watch ATN/Fox are old. They're the last people watching linear TV, right? So that asset is going to devalue on its own over time, but on a long arc. And he's going to go in and try to, you know, blow it up in advance and turn it into something else. I just don't know what the value is. Once you've removed the programming that audience likes. Oh, I think it's terrible overreach. It's the classic smart tech guy saying, I can clearly see the problem with this thing. And he's right. And then his solution is completely wrong.
And actually, in a weird way, his solution is not a million miles away from what David Zaslav is doing to CNN, right?
No.
In terms of like depoliticizing it and making it more boring?
Oh, that's all just pretend. David Zaslav doesn't know what to do with CNN, clearly. And has been told by John Malone it should go one way, and by other people it should go a different way. And he's got the same problem that everyone who's owned and ran CNN has, which is, what do you do when there's not a national crisis?
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't watch CNN unless something is blowing up. And so, you know, pre-Trump, Jeff Zucker's solution was to do the poop cruise or the Malaysia plane and make those, you know, 2-week-long story. Embarrassing, right? Bad journalism. But that's what you have to do if you are running a non-ideological 24-hour news operation. There's no reason for people to watch you unless you've ginned up some fake news. They watch MSNBC or Fox because they're loyalists, and there's no reason to watch CNN. And so this premise of non-ideological news, I guess a long-winded way of saying yes, maybe he thinks that's what Zaslav's doing, but Zaslav doesn't know. But he's taking Fox, in the world of Succession, he's taking Fox News and trying to make it CNN, which is a terrible idea.
Yeah, I think it's a bad idea because you have a brand and the brand means something, and he's trying to take away what that brand means and like blow it up for an audience that doesn't even exist or maybe exists but watches something else.
Weirdly, when we find out at the end of the episode that Tom isn't on the kill list, and there's that little exchange between Roman and Shiv where Roman's like, yeah, he's actually doing a perfectly good job. It strikes me that if you needed to pick one person to run ATN, Tom wouldn't be terrible. He does actually understand how it works, and he understands what the politics are. And he might not share the politics, but he knows where the bread is buttoned. He basically understands how to run it. Emily is shaking her head. She refuses to believe that Tom can actually be competent at anything.
He has no like backbone or moral center, and I think. I mean, in the real world, if you run a media
company... You say that
company,
like it's a bad thing.
Well, if you run a media company, you need a little bit of a center or something. Or am I wrong? Like
he's in that structure. He's the operator, right? So he's not the programming person. That's Sid, who they're going to fire. He's
right.
The guy to, you know, lead the sales calls and do that sort of stuff. He's not going to rally the newsroom. He's also, you know... I just love how this show constantly shows you over and over how the kids, but everyone else in that world is just bad at their job. Tom, whose main job is supposed to be like being amenable and personable, like can't strike up a conversation with Mattson. He wimps out and walks by initially, which is great. And then when he does sit down, he tries to make small talk, and it's the worst small talk ever, which, by the way, I would do the exact same thing, but I'm not presenting myself as the CEO of a $1 billion operation that fake gravitas you're supposed to have.
It was so cringe. I wrote down cringe like 4 times in my notes. I couldn't believe it. It was the one time I watched something happen. I was like, I wouldn't.
We laughed. We were at Sun Valley. We were mocking Sundar's cargo shorts. The creases. That's his opening line.
The creases, remember?
And then the only thing that kind of moves him off of it is Greg coming over and being twice as cringy.
Even more cringe. Although and Greg had that wonderful line about the baguette is mightier than the bagel.
And it's funny because at the beginning, like on the plane when they're trying to hype up, there's this speech about how like they're wolves or something. Yeah. One of you probably wrote it down. They're the wolves and they're coming in. They don't know what's going to hit them. And it's like, actually, you're just embarrassed. All of you are embarrassing pretty much except Carolina.
That's Jerry, right? She has that speech. Mm-hmm. Do you think she believes it?
No.
No. I think Logan did like release a pathogen onto these people and they don't know how to behave themselves in the normal world because they have gotten so used to like ingratiating themselves with this like completely irrational
they're not best of breed, right? They're people who succeeded in Waystar Royko, which is that they made themselves useful enough to Logan not to get fired.
Yeah.
But not powerful enough to challenge him.
It's fascinating, though, to think about, like, the Gojo team, right? Are they a NASDAQ master race, or, like, are they actually just as moronic as anyone else?
I mean, they probably are as moronic, right, as evidenced by, like, Mattson's going to buy ATN, which is a terrible idea, but they're on the ascent, right? And they are young, and they are fit, and they're the ones who are going to buy the old group. So they are the alphas in this case. Now, they can absolutely overreach and be wrong, but they are. I mean, that's why Jerry has to make that fake confident speech about how they're cosseted and weak and socialist and European, because they are clearly way ahead. And they, you know, Waystar Royko is flying to them, right? They have all the power.
2 days after their father died. As
and the, and the, that wonderful little bit where Oscar and Mattson start talking in Swedish about like incest and Habsburgs. And Tom isn't alert enough to pick up on the incest and the Habsburgs and is just trying to laugh along when in fact they're just telling him.
They say, right.
His
and
entire
do you agree
company
with us?
Is completely inbred.
I mean, that's how they come across, as completely inbred. I was really embarrassed for everyone. It's like, I don't know, you go somewhere with you've had this experience. You go somewhere with someone you know, but you're totally outclassed. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, like the curtain's been raised or something. Or you have people over your house and you're like, Jesus, it's messy in here. You don't even notice. That's how I felt about this episode. It's like reveals just how crap these people all are.
Right. In an episode prior, right, they were making fun, was it 2 episodes prior? They're making fun of the interloper with the capacious bag because she doesn't know how to behave in their world.
Yes, exactly.
And then you move them 8 hours east and they're totally off they have no status at all.
Yes.
Can we talk about the 8 hours east thing? Because I feel like this episode finally puts the knife in this thesis that Emily has that there's 10 episodes and they're one day each and they're each the day after the previous episode. Like, for one thing, this episode actually takes place over 3 days. For another thing, the main day in the middle of it, when Mattson meets the brothers, they talk about what the stock did on Monday, which means that they're meeting on Tuesday, right? So if Logan dies on Friday, and we've only had one day in between, clearly we are not having one day per episode here.
It was 3 days. Fine, case closed, but I think it was a 2-day, not a 3-day. They only had one night and a morning. It was a day, a night, and a morning.
So they had a day when Kendall goes into the office, right? Then they fly overnight because the plane is dark when they fly out.
Yeah.
They land the following morning. Then there's the big party where everyone does Molly. They go to sleep. They wake up the following morning and fly back.
Yeah.
And the following morning is when they meet on the top of the mountaintop and Roman insults Mattson and all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it really is 3 days.
Huh. All right. Well, I think we should link to this great time story that also agrees with me about the one-day episode each.
But
even though I am wrong, I'm still sticking to it.
That great time story was written before episode 5 came out, and now everything needs to be.
I'm still sticking to it. Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This episode of Slate Money is brought to you by Wondery, which is a podcast company, and it makes a podcast called The Best One Yet, and it is a daily podcast hosted by Nick and Jack, who serve up three of the most interesting business news stories every day and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie, or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones, or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? That's the kind of stuff you find on The Best One Yet. So be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more. Wondery means business.
A collision between a Chinese jet and an American spy plane.
He came and rammed into our left wing.
With relations increasingly strained, what are the chances of things spinning out of control?
The Western world was asleep.
I'm Gordon Carrera. I'll be exploring the friction in this most important of relationships and asking, has the West taken its eye off the ball?
You cannot ignore China.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Shadow War, China and the West. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We should talk about Roman completely fucking himself, right? At the top of the mountain and telling Mattson that, like, he's never going to do the deal and just, like, losing his shit. And, yeah, what was that?
I think Roman has more feeling for Logan than any of the other kids. And so particularly when Mattson was sort of insulting him and he called him a prick and you saw Roman push back on it. And then he, you know, his big grievance was, you know, you made us come out here a couple of days after our dad died. And this was after you jerked around our dad for, you know, 6 months. So it seemed like, you know, the emotional element of it was really Roman's relationship with Logan.
Yeah, and it did feel like emotionally real. He wasn't, you know, putting on an act. And there was a lot of, I mean, even by Succession standards, there was a lot of swearing in that scene. He said, you inhuman fucking dog man, I fucking hate you, you stupid cunt, you piece of shit. It's like, okay, I get the message.
And he, of course, did it while Lucas Mattson was peeing, because that is a common Roman behavior. He's always talking to people while they're peeing.
They had a previous interaction while Lucas was peeing, and they peed on the app, on the Waystar app.
Yes, I forgot about that. And didn't Roman also, with the Mencken, the Nazi presidential candidate, they had a pee thing too.
Yeah,
I'm sure that's three, basically. So it's a trend, and it probably means something.
Roman only really interacts with men, other men, when they're peeing, basically.
Yeah, he also makes a point of going up to him while he's doing it, right? Because Mattson goes, I'm just going to walk over here and indelicately pee on the side of my mountain. And the Roman says, well, I'm going to sit in front of you, which is definitely a violation of bro code, and then yell at you. So it is some real dick swinging going on throughout this entire episode. And Mattson is almost always winning.
Can we just mention Hugo at the top talking about the CE bros? And you're like, no.
This is Hugo did not win this episode in any way.
Oh my God, this is such, I mean, that was so cringe when he went up to his opposite number and was like, you almost won the bronze.
Oh my God. What about his plate running over with food, with his pastries?
Yes. Yeah. Oh. And they call him out.
And he's
on
like,
it too,
I metabolize first.
Which is, he's so humiliating. If you were, someone has once said, oh, go for it, Peter. Well, I was piling my plate or something. And I was like, very humbled.
No, that, yeah, the quote is, I metabolize first because I'm dynamic.
Yeah, that doomed him. That put him right on the list. He rocketed to the top of the kill list.
So yeah, I mean, to your point, Emily, like the two names that Shiv gives Mattson as being competent, Jerry and Carolina, are the two names that aren't on the kill list, right?
Right.
That conversation seems to have made its way straight into the kill list, well, in one way or another.
I believe so, yes.
We should have some favorite lines because there are some good ones in this one. It's not really just my favorite one-liner, but I really did like the bit where Roman, for like a brief delusional second, thinks he might have killed the deal. And he turns to Ken and goes, if a deal collapses in the wood and no one hears it, is it an SEC violation? Which basically what he's saying is smart, right? What he's saying is, I have a fiduciary duty to get the best price for my shareholders as CEO of this company. If they knew I was trying to kill this deal, then I would be open to all manner of enormous lawsuits and it would be very, very damaging to me. But hey, you know, so long as it's just the three of us up here and no one recorded it, like, can we get away with it?
Yeah, and they absolutely have to take the deal, right? Although, I don't know what that does to... I mean, the deal has to then blow up because there's no way... I don't know what they're going to do for the next five episodes, them just counting their money. So they must have to get back... They must have to get ATN back under their ownership. Or maybe the deal is going to close in X number of days and they can still fuck around with it until then.
You know, there's a lot of antitrust we need to worry about.
Everyone keeps talking about this election, and in that timepiece that confirmed my theory that has been unconfirmed by this latest episode, there is speculation that the season ends on election day or near election day, because it's very close. And at some point, someone said something about election days in 10 days or something. So maybe there's some kind of like Nazi takes the White House and then they're stuck with him in ATN kind of a situation.
Maybe Nazi gets assassinated at the last minute and then Connor steps in and winds up being the president-elect because he's like the consensus vice president candidate or something.
Poor Connor, he's stuck back in New York trying to bury his father in a kilt.
Okay, so this is, I'm just going to come in with my number one favorite line from the episode.
You can't do all your lines.
You are all coming after me.
This is your second line.
All right, my second line.
It's your show. It's your show, but
you're right. But I'm gonna leave you guys to do the best lines. But I need to mention this one because I just love it so much. It's just Connor saying, "I just had to cancel on a room full of working class whites in Cleveland."
Ah, that was my favorite. I have a backup, but
you totally did, Alex.
What's your backup, Elizabeth?
Was Tom at the beginning, and when Greg says, you know, why Norway, not Sweden? He goes, Norway, Sweden, what's the difference? They're all descended from the same rapist.
Yeah, that's a good one. Tom he comes across very parochial in this episode, like when he says he doesn't care about France. We have our own France.
What is our own France? I don't even know what that means.
We have our own Paris, and if it burns, we'll just build another one.
Paris.
Yeah, oh, sorry, we have our own Paris.
What is it, Washington, D.C., something? I have no idea.
I don't think Washington, D.C. is our Paris. What is we have Paris, Texas.
We have Paris, Texas. There you go.
Peter, say your line before someone steals it.
Okay, well, I have a couple, but I'll pick one. So it's Kendall's psych-up mantra near at the end. I just think it's fucking feel the force time, choose our adventure, full bore, fuck the living shit out of this thing.
He's the worst one, I think, in terms of business acumen, right?
He's got just enough to be, right? He's half smart. right? He has posture. He knows how he's supposed to look and present. He can't do it. He definitely knows some lingo. And then it sort of stops after that.
When he finally realizes that he does need to bring the whole entourage to Norway, he says this very like corporate, very Ken thing. I wrote it down. Yeah, no, great, great, good.
Yeah, no is like a big thing now. People say it all the time. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no, great, great, good. Just
means,
you know.
Yeah. Can mean
it's like, up, down, up, down, left, right, BBA. Yeah.
Emily, give us a line.
What's your favorite line?
I think it comes from Shiv. And it's, if you're the creepy stalker guy who sits in the dark writing code dripping into an IV bag and harassing his direct reports, that's going to have an economic impact. I like that. It's true.
It's just like, you know, being a creepy stalker guy, you know, it's all well and good, but like when it starts hurting your stock price, then you have to start worrying about these things.
Got to make the economic case for not sending the blood. Can't just be about ethics.
In the immortal words of
hygiene or whatever.
In the immortal words of Matt Levine, everything is securities fraud. Even sending your blood to your comms chief.
Oh God, the blood! And he was like, first it was a joke.
It's a joke.
Then it wasn't a joke. Then it went back to being a joke.
Elizabeth, did you have a tech CEO in mind for Mattson?
No, I wondered if the blood brick thing was just sort of derivative of Peter Thiel's, you know, blood habit. But I didn't.
Yeah.
He didn't remind me of anybody specifically. But there were a lot of elements of the retreat that felt very tech company. You know, the shot of the drone, the axe throwing, the molly. Yeah.
Yep.
What about the sauna? Sauna.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if there was definitely an element there of those notorious big WeWork retreats that they used to have every year, with the parties and the drugs.
And Daniel Ek does host a big Sweden conference that it's like his own code conference or any. All the tech companies do this now, but he's got one that he does in Sweden.
But the kind of megalomaniacal self-delusion, I feel, is quite Adam Newman in its own way.
Yeah, he's really an amalgam of all these folks, men. There's a lot of men who work at Gojo, right? And Ebba. I didn't see many other women.
The inner circle is all dudes, and then the comms lady.
And the comms lady.
Pretty standard distribution.
And the comms lady who's also the CEO's girlfriend, on-off girlfriend.
And he says, oh, that was one of my lines I was going to say. Ebba's like an estrogen air freshener.
What? Yeah, I know. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you can see why she's going to go public with, like, she has.
She says something
so
like, I'm taking notes so that whenever I walk, it either goes into my book or they have to pay me off.
Felix, are you a compression socks fan at this stage of your life?
I know, right? Like, yeah, they're like, whoops. Well, so that was something from the last episode, right? That the reason Logan died was that he wasn't wearing his compression socks because he wanted to impress Carrie.
Yeah, yeah.
So then you see in this episode, Frank and Carl, like, getting in there, putting on their compression socks because they don't want to die. Like, the last time they were on a plane, someone died from not wearing compression socks. That's important. I think they're good for on a plane.
But also,
you should wear them.
Talking of planes, my other favorite line from Hugo, where he's like, "You're on the other plane, by the way."
Burn.
you know, you failed to really make it as part of the, what does he call them, the
quad squad
or something? The
quad squad.
The quad squad. You know, the quad squad doesn't really exist when you're on the other plane.
Yeah, he also in that same bit, he says, it's not a trip to the Guggenheim, Greg. It's musical electric chairs. They're all doing a lot of, like, intentionally overwrought stuff here to, like, show how tough they are. There's a line about, like, death wrestling with ogres.
Yeah.
But yeah, Greg is, like, sexualizing the whole thing and talking about all of the hot Swedish babes or whatever. Yeah. And, like, is that something you do on a trip to the Guggenheim?
No.
You're mixing metaphors.
Yeah. I think the suggestion was you're not in high school. We're not in high school.
Yeah, you're right. This is like at the Guggenheim. He's out there picking up babes. But he was dancing with Ebba, by the way. P.S.
He was. Maybe, you never know. Like, Greg is, like, weirdly self-confident when it comes to picking up babes.
And Greg gets the goss, right? He comes up to Tom with, like, gossip he really can't use about...
He's like, oh, yeah, there's a kill list. Like, who told him there was a kill list?
Maybe Ebba.
Maybe Ebba.
Did anyone pick up the this is completely unsubstantiated celebrity gossip, but they're making a very direct reference when they're talking about Mattson's sexual proclivities wearing the headphones.
Who?
Oh.
If you Google celebrity who wears headphones during sex, you will absolutely get a hit at the top of the page.
Like, Emily is literally Googling this. I can see her Googling it.
Oh my God. Wow. Wow.
I'm going to have to do this too now.
Yeah. What's great now is everyone listening to this podcast is doing the same thing. Yeah.
So, yeah, we will be back next week. I'm assuming that at least for one episode, this deal is going to be presumptively on, that if and when it falls apart, it won't be for another couple of episodes.
We got to get a funeral too, right?
Oh my God. We've got to get the funeral. Yeah.
You got a funeral. You got an election. We're going to see Mencken. We know that from the trailers.
Nice. Nice. That's a lot of stuff. It's good juice. All right. Any last predictions?
Well, also in the trailer, I don't know if you guys have discussed this. At the the opening season, whatever they call it, has Kendall talking about when the last season on, right? They have Kendall talking about his murder, right? He says, "I didn't," there's the OJ reference. This is like OJ if he didn't kill anyone, and he says, "Oh, what if I did?" Right? So the HBO at least has laid out the idea that death still has to play out. Somewhere in this season.
Yeah, like really? Colin has the dirt and Colin isn't gone yet.
Colin's not gone, Marcia's not gone, and then he told his siblings, right? So that's
right.
At least four people who know. I would imagine the siblings are the ones most likely to bring it up.
Really?
Everyone has dirt on everyone, man. Ebba has dirt on Mattson. Now Shiv has dirt on Mattson.
And when is Shiv going to reveal that she is pregnant? I mean, it's going to reveal itself at some point.
Well, I mean, if we've only got 10 days, maybe it doesn't, but yeah.
But you don't believe that, Felix, so... Yeah.
Thank you to Patrick Fort for producing, and thank you to Peter Kafka for coming on. It's been amazing.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We will be back on Saturday with a regular Slate Money, and then back next Monday with yet another Slate Money Succession episode.